Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. Well, the weeks have turned into months and the months have turned into a whole year. And here we are saying farewell to FY19 and saying hello to fiscal year 2020. So as a brand new financial year rolls in, how will it possibly be for your wealth and your money? And what are the things to keep in mind from a personal finance discipline and hygiene standpoint as we start afresh this new year? Well, joining in to share thoughts on these aspects, I have with me this week Ashish Somaiya, CEO of Motilal Oswal Mutual Fund, and Feroz Aziz, Deputy CEO, Anand Rathi Private Wealth. And in just a bit, we will also be joined by Prashant Thakur, Head of Research at Anarock, and he will give us a lowdown on what to expect from the real estate market in 2020. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for joining in. Maybe I should start by wishing you a happy new fiscal year as we are looking at 2020 all over again. So it's been interesting. First thoughts, Ashish, let's kick it off with you. I was just looking at indices. You know, we always do that when we're, looking at performance. So for the Nifty or the Sensex, not that bad. 12% at the index level. Mid-caps and small-caps, let's just forget about it. First thoughts as we're entering a new financial year.
Yeah, I think it's been a challenging year for sure. And I think what you alluded to in terms of the huge divergence between the frontline indices versus the broad market, I think two or three questions which are top of mind for clients who I meet. One is clearly that, the green that they see in the frontline index is clearly not showing in their portfolios, right? Plus, I think this has been one of the first years when pretty much all managed products have struggled to, and that's correlated actually, mm-hmm. pretty much all managed products have struggled to beat the mm-hmm. indices.
So because when you say managed products, you mean actively managed funds?
I mean all of mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So I think the huge divergence between the frontline index, and of course we all know that the frontline index, again, the top four or five stocks have kind of played a big role, whereas mm-hmm. the broad market has dragged mm. in a very big way. Mm. And the other interesting thing is that if you see the mid-cap space, for example, in fact, this was a weird year because in large caps, you had so many governance issues and so many news and management changes and lots of things. Whereas in the mid-cap index, if you really ask me, at least we can speak for portfolios that we manage. The earnings numbers, I mean, there has been a PE deflation, but the earnings numbers or the disappointments have pretty much not been there. I mean, the earnings numbers have been pretty good. Mm. There have been no accidents in the portfolios. So I think the overall numbers versus what is actually happening in the portfolios, there is a huge gap. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that FY20 will kind of iron out the anomalies.
Well, we live in hope, so let's hope that really happens. Feroz, of course, while the point on earnings is a different one, I guess we've also gone through a learning curve this year. We've had issues like Island FS. We've had issues like, one of the best-known media companies of this country running into trouble because of certain promoter-related borrowings, etc. So it's been a learning curve as well. Your first thoughts as you look back at FY19 and then look forward to 2020?
I think, of course, like you said, mm-hmm. Whenever you have financial years or any milestone, you mm-hmm. should write down your learnings. So I think learning number one from the equity side is that whenever you look at equity, you can't just look at the rearview mirror. That happened extensively because 2017 mm-hmm. was very good. FY 2018 was very good for mid caps and small caps. Mm-hmm. But if you see how they had actually run ahead of Nifty, right? So this kind of divergence was writing on the wall that Nifty can do better than mid cap and small cap. Mm. Because just the previous year, 60% growth on the small cap index. So what's the learning? Don't look at the rearview mirror. Look at the differential PE between large cap and mid cap average. 8 to 9 PE is the difference. But mid caps were quoting at 30 extra PE. And still people were buying mid caps and small caps. So point one, rearview mirror is not the best way to make your judgments. Use differential relative valuation to decide which part of the market you would be in. Mm-hmm. Second is rely not just on ratings, rely on other measures of credit risk like Z scores. So that's the second learning. I'd stop at second learning and leave the rest of it.
Yeah, because they were pretty intense lessons, some of the ones that Feroz is talking about. We'll go through them step by step. But now looking forward to perhaps what the next 12 months might have in store, we still have a lot of events to go over. Suddenly the whole dialogue and discussion in global markets about the way central banks are behaving, that's changing. Back home, we have, of course, the elections to look forward to. So is it going to be a very volatile next 10, 12 months, Ashish? Or do you think that, the bulls will pretty much tide over?
So my sense is that I'll go with the latter, because my sense is that we are through with a lot of volatility, a lot of the events. If you ask me, whatever the pain points were, say, 6 months or 9 months back, whether it is US policy, whether it is RBI policy, whether it is management changes with banks, whether it is actually the actual performance of banks in terms of provisioning and the NPA cycle itself, or even if you see broadly the corporate performance, or even oil prices. So if you ask me, a lot of the negatives are there, which are behind us. I think everybody is very preoccupied with the election, whereas I really think that apart from election, what I mentioned now are also some highlights one needs to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Also keep in mind is that it happens very rarely that the Western world and a lot of other economies are peaking out in terms of their economic performance. Mm-hmm. And exactly at the same time, we are in a counter-cyclical position where we are beginning a kind of, we are coming out of the woods.
Fair enough. Now, Feroz, I know from a wealth management and planning standpoint, timing is something that you'd never recommend and you'd never do. It's all about life stage goals. But having said that, if I just look at where we stand today, look at market dynamics, conditions, a lot of the points that Ashish also mentioned, do you ever recommend people to go a little, you know, high up on cash and sort of, take profits off? Because that's a conversation that I don't hear too often, that should you be churning, should you be taking profits? Or would you simply recommend, straightforward investments to continue as we enter this year?
To answer that question as pointed as I could get, is that you have to identify extreme situations. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the rule of staying invested is a good thing. If you can identify extremes where greed and fear overcome the decision making, then you're good. How do you identify extremes? Now, what do I do when I advise clients? Is see that markets have only spent 5% of the time above a 26 PE. Mm-hmm. Okay, that means 95% of the time spent by Nifty is below that PE. Mm-hmm. The next time when I see 26 and above PE, red flag goes up, right? So you have to identify extremes. The tails need to be formula driven, not human judgment driven. Now, where are we today? I would say that we are still in a situation where you should stay invested. Mm-hmm. And election years are the years which have been huge opportunities in the past. Mm-hmm. All the last 20 years data says so. 1 year periods during election has minimum given a 17% return and a 55% on the higher side. So elections on the perception and impression sides are a disadvantage, but data says otherwise. Mm-hmm. The fifth election could be different from the other four, which I was just throwing as data. Mm-hmm. But you can't ignore the last 20 years information when you're taking a strategy for this year's election and you're staying in cash.
Okay, great. So I think we have an optimistic viewpoint to kick things off with. We have Ashish saying that perhaps, the worst of the economic downturn could be ending. We have Feroz telling us that it is time to really stay invested. So let me ask the CEO of a mutual fund, in terms of equity funds, and of course, equity is what Motilal Oswal does so well. What kind of funds? Because we just discussed the divergence between the way mid caps have done and small caps, and you've really lost money if you're still in those funds, you're nursing those losses. Vis-a-vis large caps, relatively better off. What should the ideal mix be as we're entering this new phase?
So, I'll caveat it. Basically, my personal opinion has always been that never ask an AMC guy which fund to buy. Mm-hmm.
I always ask the AMC guys, where are you putting your own money? So what kind of funds would you put your own money in?
No, my money is in my funds, but I respect a couple of things. Like, for example, I had a previous question on, say, cash or now which funds to buy. Mm-hmm. So guys like me, we are only equity single philosophy and we just dissect it by large cap, mid cap, multi cap, right? But let's say if I have to, what is my personal view? I've always been a big votary of mid caps. And I would like to specify that when we say mid caps, people hyphenate it and make it mid and small caps. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying mid caps with an intention that anything which is $1 billion to $5 billion market cap, I think that is the sweet spot. According to me, generally, I think for any investor who has, say, a five-year perspective, I've always been a votary of mid-caps. And why I'm specifying this is because the market investors move between wild swings. They say, no, only large, like Feroz mentioned, rare view. Today, you ask someone, they'll say, no, I think I should be in large caps. But that's typical rare view thought
it's
process.
Human psyche, yeah. I suppose. Okay, fair enough. So let's ask the wealth manager, the planner here on the panel, how we should do this. Now, again, if I take the example of a mid-career professional, let's say you were to tell me about the best four or five funds that my money should be in, medium risk appetite, then looking at the scenario all around, what sort of funds would you go in for?
So I would definitely go in for a reasonable portion in large cap.
Okay.
But multi-cap, to my mind, like Ashish said, that the fund manager has the clear understanding what businesses he buys. Mm-hmm. So as a private banker, I would rather delegate as much as I can from a standpoint of management to a fund manager. So multi-cap funds can be a core portion of one's portfolio, not necessarily large cap. So I would look at Reliance large cap.
Okay.
Mirai Asset India Equity on the multi-cap side, Kotak Select Focus.
Okay.
And if you have to...
Those would be two multi-caps?
Two multi-caps.
Okay.
One focused mid-cap kind of a fund, like the Motilal Oswal Focused Equity Fund, Focused 35 Equity Fund. So that gives you a little concentrated portfolio. Mm-hmm. That's on the equity side. Mm-hmm. And if you have to buy another mid-cap, pure mid-cap, then HDFC mid-cap, Chirag Setalwar, who's the fund manager, has done a very good job in terms of bottom-up stock picking. So these are the five funds.
Okay, so those are five funds. We've got a couple of ideas on the multi-cap side. There's an idea on the large-cap side, plus an idea on the mid-cap side. On the focus fund, let me ask you this, Ashish. I mean, obviously, when you're getting into a focus fund, there is additional risk that you're taking. What are your expectations from your fund manager on this fund as we're looking at this year?
See, we have to be mindful of two things. Mm-hmm. First is that when we use the word focused, it doesn't mean concentrated. Because, you know, in my book, 10 to 12 stocks is concentrated, 20, 30 stocks is focused. And say 50 is what the market reads as diversified. My humble opinion is over-diversified. That's how I would look at it. We have to be mindful of two things. One is if we are bottom-up, we are stock pickers, then we should be 20, 30 stocks because that's what how much you can work on. The second point is that if you are a top-down guy, and you are going to allocate, then it might end up with a larger number of stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if you're keeping where the index is, if you're keeping that in mind, and if you're a top-down strategist, it's possible that you might have large number of stocks. But if you're a bottom-up guy, our portfolios are 60-70% index agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
Like what is the weightage of sectors and stocks in the index versus what is it in our portfolio? There is actually no great correlation, right? So my expectation is that over a 4-5 year period, we should own a portfolio where we double the EPS. That's the thought process.
Okay, Guy, I get your point on over-diversification there. Just very quickly, before we talk about fixed income, the funds that you mentioned on the equity side, Feroz, what are your return expectations from these funds, the five that you mentioned?
See, of course, there will be some degree of relative return.
Sure.
So I think in spite of a bad year from mutual fund extra return, which is also called alpha perspective, I would say this is an exact replica of 2013 when there was risk aversion. So I would say alphas will come back with a bang for the industry. You can't conclude with such data that passive funds are good. So relative risk return expectation would be a 3-4% alpha over Nifty.
Over the
Nifty, because all of them will have different benchmarks. I'm saying over Nifty because that's the opportunity cost from the equity standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Second, an absolute return perspective after superimposing the Nifty's expectation, which I would like to put on record, is about 15-16% over the next 4-5 years, compounded CAGR. So basically in 5 years, you can double your money.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Ashish, let's get your thoughts in on the rate cycle itself. Are you expecting big cuts and does that sort of flow in towards the whole idea of positive equity markets that we discussed earlier?
Yeah, I think that, you know, given that we've been behind the curve, okay, and this might sound like aggressive or a different type of view compared to what we are hearing, I think given that we are behind the curve, we should have aggressive rate cuts. The reason being that doing 25 basis points rate cuts every 2 months in incremental format is very different from giving a strong signal at one shot.
Mm-hmm.
So let me put it this way. I will not be surprised if RBI surprises us. I'll put
by
it
being
that
a little
way.
More dovish than what the market perhaps anticipates or expects. Just a word on fixed income funds as well, Feroz, because this has been a very confusing part of the market, specifically for retail investors who are barely beginning to sort of, you know, move beyond fixed deposits and look at fixed income. And then we had events like Island FS and this confusion around rates, the flip-flop that Ashish is talking about. Now, again, if you're looking at investments for 1-3 years, I'm not talking about people who are just parking overnight money or money in liquid funds, 1-3 years, want a better return than fixed deposits, what are the options?
See, firstly, if you put your fundamental rules of managing debt money quickly, one is people have this huge perception that I can go AAA and be very, very safe. Without knowing which are the agencies which actually give these ratings. People don't even ask which ratings AAA is more credible. India has 38 plus AAA rated companies. US has two. Okay, are you saying US corporates are weaker than Indians? So they have been generously distributed.
They're AAA, you know, in evening, we wake up in the morning, realize that, oh, they're actually junk grade. So that's also, that's happened this year.
Correct. So please don't go by impressions. Point two, use credit risk funds. The risk name is very, very repulsive, so people don't use it. Buy 4 or 5 credit risk funds. You will get 10 to 100 to 130 bonds in your portfolio. Even after that crisis of the ILFS and some other fallouts in the NBFC side, the funds which actually possessed them were not just the credit risk funds. They were actually the AAA rated funds. There were FMPs which actually had them.
Yes.
So, but people's risk aversion to things which to other funds was very high. So please don't go by impressions. Buy credit risk funds. As long as you can buy credit risk funds, you will get 1.5 to 2% more than a AAA rated fund. In 3 years, you will get 7 to 8% more than a AAA rated fund.
So, any names that you'd
I'll give four names. ICICI Regular Savings, now called as ICICI Credit Risk Fund, Franklin Dynamic Accrual, Franklin Credit Risk Fund, Reliance Credit Risk Fund. These four funds can surely form a part of anybody's debt credit risk portfolio.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. It's now time to talk about real estate. Prashant Thakur, Head of Research at Anarock, is with us. Prashant, so here's the question. The market that you track has been in the doldrums for so long. Now, the equity stocks are already getting excited for some reason or the other. The question is, physical real estate, is it also turning a corner? Do you think so?
If we look at the last 11 quarters, you know, we have been tracking very closely the sales and absorption data. The encouraging part has been that from the last 11 quarters, the sales have exceeded the new launches. So this you know, points towards a phase where the developers have consciously cut down the new launches and have been focusing on completing the existing projects. So I think in 3 or 4 quarters, we'll see a scenario where the unsold inventory would come to a reasonable level. And the buyer's confidence are also coming back with, you know, when they see the projects moving at a faster rate and handovers happening, you know, at a faster rate. So these two factors have positively impacted the real estate. And the start of 2019 has been good for the industry, wherein, you know, the interim budget was extremely favorable for real estate. And the cut down of GST rates from 12 to 5% for under construction project and a GST of 1% for affordable projects. I think these were the couple of positive factors that is going to bring back the sector back on track.
Okay, so Prashant, now, let me ask you this, because this is money, and right now I'm not talking about the home buyer, because that's a separate conversation altogether. Any time is a good time to buy your own house. But this is a conversation about investment. Now, if I tell you that, you know, I have anything between 50 lakhs to 1 CR, am I better off parking that? And this is long-term money. Let's say this is money over next 5 to 10 years. Is there a case you can build? Should this money go into real estate at all? Or maybe, as usual, I'm better off in equities. What would you say?
No, in my opinion, you know, real estate should always be part of a portfolio, because the kind of stability it gives. And if you look at the scenario right now, where you have, you know, affordable housing picking up, new micro markets opening up, in my opinion, it's a good time to get into the market, because the prices are quite low. And if you look at the kind of development in terms of you know, the office spaces coming up in various micro markets, that is pushing up your residential demands. And if you look at the residential real estate, the way it is now being consumed has evolved. Now you'll see a lot of, you know, co-living, student housing, senior citizen. So the multi-use of residential real estate is evolving. So in my opinion, for any investor, I think 4 or 5 years, if he has, you know, 4 to 5 years of time horizon, I think if he has 40 to 50 lakhs, should definitely park his money in real estate as well.
Prashant, stay right there, because I'm going to come back to you and ask you for specific examples then and where to park this money. But let me get thoughts from the other panelists as well. I don't know, Feroz, Prashant manage to convince you at all, or would you still say that no, go back to the equity market, go back to mutual funds?
I would say go back to equity market. Of course, it has to be taken with a pinch of salt, because if somebody is from the financial side would generally not be a fan of physical real estate, because India has 60-odd% of HNI money or even upper middle class money in real estate. We are so overly exposed. Globally, it is 18%. So there's something we know more than the world does about real estate.
Absolutely. Take that point. But Prashant, let me actually revert back to you, since you did make that case for those who are interested, those who perhaps don't have exposure to real estate in their portfolio. Which are the micro markets one could look at? How should you go about these smart investments? It's not just about, you know, blocking your money and buying a house where perhaps you'll have very low rental yields. It has to be smart investment. So what are these opportunities?
So if we look at the southern part of India, specifically cities like Hyderabad and Bangalore, there are a couple of metrics, you know, which would help us to identify good investment opportunities for long term. Now, these two cities include, you know, Hyderabad and Bangalore, they have the lowest level of inventory compared to, you know, MMR and NCR. So in my opinion, the micro markets which are closer to your employment hubs, like, you know, for example, in Bangalore, the North Bangalore, which is, you know, which has Manyata Tech Park, Aeros City, closer to airport, and you know, the projects are at a very competitive rate. So you're entering the market at a very right stage, very right price. And, you know, as other panelists, they said that the developers are willing to offer you a very competitive rate. So in my opinion, when you're investing, just focus on where the commercial spaces are coming up. And then, you know, and your investment decision would be quite, you know, narrowed down to cities like Bangalore, Pune and Hyderabad. And, you know, I would advise people to opt. I would advise people to, you know, stay away from NCR, which has huge amount of unsold inventory. Still, you know, a lot of projects are stuck and we are seeing a lot of litigations.
Sure, Prashant, let me quickly try and squeeze in a question on Mumbai. Obviously, our viewers have a lot of interest in this market itself. We finally see some action on the Navi Mumbai airport. But I don't know, because this market already ran up so much in 2012-13 in anticipation. Now, where are values today? Is there any sense or any zone in and around the Mumbai metropolitan region where perhaps investments can be looked into?
So in my opinion, I think, you know, you're right. The Navi Mumbai's airport was always factored in the pricing. So prices have already run up. So in my opinion, the central suburb would be an option, because, you know, it's closer to your hubs like BKC, and then, you know, still you have a lot of options over there.
Okay, fair enough.
And that's if you have to deploy your money, stick to central suburb.
Central suburbs. Yeah. All right, got it. So if it's Mumbai, then look at central suburbs. That's the advice from Anurag. Let's take final thoughts with our other experts as well. So, Ashish, then as we're rounding up this conversation about 2020, I mean, what does your gut feeling tell you? Is it going to be a wealth-generating year or not? And any tips, any ideas you'd like to leave us with?
It is going to be a wealth-generating financial year. And I think people who have been on the sidelines should start deploying in equity.
Okay, all right. That's very simply put. Feroz, same question to you.
Yeah, I think it is definitely going to be a good year, like it has been in the past. Whenever there's something which is continued governance, and the government, if the election results are favorable, then there's going to be wealth created. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be an important event. How much ever you say that events don't matter, this event certainly does. One tip which is very important, I personally think, don't compromise on liquidity. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of portfolios and balance sheets, 60-70% of their money is illiquid. Okay. The new mantra is wealth is not net worth. Wealth is that portion of your money which is portable. Mm-hmm. I think portability of money, not just the tangibility of it, is also important. So allocate wisely.
So keep it safe and keep it liquid. I guess that's something to keep in mind. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And we wish you greetings for this new fiscal year as well. May it be profitable for you, your business associates as well. And a very, very happy new financial year to our viewers. Of course, we are going to be here with you throughout the course of the year with more ideas, with more conversations. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's SurabhiUpadhyay. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.